Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, June 16th, 2018, you are listening to the PW Torch Live Cast, a.k.a. The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan, joining you and talking with you and chatting about all the fun things we can. The life, mystery, history of Mid-South, New Japan Pro Wrestling, fandom, mathematics, life in the fast lane, World Cup. You name it, we talk about it, but this week's deep dive is going to be a special You, Me, and Wrestling-esque look into one of our long-standing Torch members, Dan Kuster. He is a great man when it comes to the numbers, great man when it comes to the fandom. So without any further ado, let me bring Dan on. Dan, welcome to the deep dive. How are you tonight?
Rich, I'm doing great. Really excited to join you this evening. Still basking in the glow of the events of last weekend, and you mentioned the World Cup, so I figure you're doing doubly well.
Oh, yeah, I am. This is a busy day. We had a family trip to a amusement park around here, Kennywood, and Trey ran into his favorite football player, and I got to see the World Cup, work my little second side job gig stuff, and now I get to talk wrestling, so I cannot complain at all.
I'm excited about it. I think there's a lot of different places the conversation will go. I'll just kind of mention, I appreciate the introduction, and I'll tell the listeners, as I told you, I'm sure we'll get some good calls this evening. I've been calling into these programs, I guess, for a few years, back to Bruce and Travis, and then yourself and Bruce, and really appreciate how all you guys have kind of raised the level of conversation over the years on wrestling and a lot of different important issues. And I'm glad to throw my two cents in. Looking forward to seeing you in Chicago also.
Yes, I'll be all in. I won't be able to go to the, the StarCast, because I have a football game that Friday night, but I will try to go to the old folks, breakfast they had set up and, whatever else they could do on that Sunday, just because I'm going to be there till Monday anyway. So I figure I'm going to take in as much as I can and enjoy it for what it is. And speaking of enjoying things, one of the big reasons I'm excited about our chat this week is before our show, I got some notes from Dan, kind of get an idea of where he wanted to go and what he wanted to do. And the first thing I wanted to talk about is your fandom in Mid-South, talking about, you know, St. Louis, Kansas City. What attracted you to it? Because that's a blind spot for me. I have next to no knowledge. I have some knowledge from maybe the odd biography, but I've never watched to the level I watch, say, even Progress, an extended even storyline out of Mid-South, other than when I was doing research for Big Cat Ernie Ladd.
Well, the first thing I'd tell you, Rich, and I'd tell really anybody, is they just put up the early 84 stuff on the network. And that's your Magnum TA, Mr. Wrestling 2 storyline. That's your Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, Stagger Lee, Junkyard Dog, Cowboy Bill Watts storylines. I mean, there is some fantastic stuff during that time frame. Now, as I mentioned to you in my email, I'm a little bit younger than that. I'm not quite as distinguished as your former co-host, Mr. Mitchell. So I started watching World Class about 83, 84 when I was a pretty young guy, and got into Mid-South really in earnest when it showed up on a local television station in Springfield, Missouri in late 85. So I lived through about the 18 month what I would call a real boom period for the Mid-South UWF. We went to a couple shows, which were really, to this day, my favorite wrestling shows I've ever been to, just because of, you know, the time and place, I guess, as much as anything. And, you know, and then also watched some of my favorites. First Jake Roberts, then Jim Duggan, then other guys kind of head north to the WWF. And I'm now today hopeful that a lot of my favorites won't do the same thing, and that's a real mystery moving forward. But there's so many great storylines through there. You know, the stuff that hasn't showed up yet on the network, the 86 stuff, the entire Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert stuff with the Russians and with Missy Hyatt and Bill Watts. I'm probably not doing any of these stories justice, but there were usually three or four really great stories going on at once in Mid-South / UWF. And to this day, that was still my favorite episodic wrestling to watch. And again, I was kind of at the right age to really appreciate it the most, I suppose, also.
And what would you say, who were the players that stood out to you when you first started watching it? Like, obviously Mid-South was a hotbed of guys. You have a Ted DiBiase, you have a Jake Roberts, you have Junkyard, you have, you know, Cowboy. Who really, like, for you, depending on your age, like first as a kid, but then now as an adult looking back, who were the most influential to you?
So I guess, you know, it was kind of funny because when I watched World Class, I wasn't super into the Von Erichs, and that was the first stuff that I got on a weekly basis. I mean, I love the passion of the stories, but they were cool, but the Devastation guys were not. And so when they fought them, I liked them. But, you know, getting into the Mid-South stuff, the good guys were like, they always seemed just a little less phony, I guess, and really tough. I loved Hacksaw Duggan. I mean, he was probably my favorite, and some people will hear that, and I've got to meet him in Waterloo, which is another thing we might visit about over the course of the hour, at the Lou Thesz, George Tregas Hall of Fame, Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And Jim Duggan's a great guy, but you know, people that associate his work in the WWF wouldn't say that he was like a top wrestler in terms of in-ring performance, but the stuff he was doing in Mid-South as a good guy really stood out to me. And one of my very favorite memories was watching him beat Buzz Sawyer instead of Dick Slater to win the North American title, which was the top title there in that part of the country. And then they quickly shifted over to a UWF title. So he kind of lost the title without ever losing it in the ring. They had a tournament, which Terry Gordy won. The Freebirds and Terry Gordy were really great back then also. I love Dr. Death. I love DiBiase. I mean, DiBiase is a good guy, would get out the black glove from time to time and still be willing to do what was necessary to help his friends. And I always thought that was like so realistic and so cool. You know, all those characters were not kind of goody-goody good guys. They were kind of blood and guts good guys, and I really like that.
And that kind of ties into, I know, one of the bigger complaints with WWE. I heard Wade's rant about Roman and how he sees himself as a heel. And a lot of people, myself included, are see him as anything but. I mean, when you watch Mid-South, I know a lot of the heels even were like far more vicious than what we've seen in several years. What was it about those guys that attracted you?
Well, and again, this is 13, 14, 15-year-old Dan, so I'm looking at it through different eyes. But I remember, you know, Kamala. This was a little bit before I was watching weekly. I mentioned to you in my email what I would do on Saturday afternoons is hope for clouds. And if it was a cloudy day, I could set up the Rodar just so and occasionally get Mid-South out of Tulsa kind of throughout 85 and some of that time before we got it locally. And I remember Kamala and Skandar Akbar throwing fire at Jim Duggan. And some of this is obviously stuff I've watched later, you know, in retrospect. I bought all the DVDs from the Watts family before the network came about. I was so into this stuff. And, you know, he's coming back with his face all burned up. And of course, Jim Ross and Bill Watts and all the announcers are just letting us know how despicable it is to, you know, throw fire at a man's eyes and try to end him. And so that was something that was a particular storyline that I found to be pretty compelling. And of course they always had although it was better than when he was in the WWF and he said, "I stand up for America, so you can't sing the Russian national anthem." I always thought that was a little bizarre, but it was almost that type of, lack of logic sometimes with the pro-America stuff, but it was still done a little better than that, whatever they would, you know, of course, they'd, whatever country we were at disagreement with was Skandar Akbar's country of origin, usually, when he was going at it with Duggan or Ted DiBiase, whoever it might be.
That's awesome. And a lot of what you're talking about kind of blends into what I also want to kind of pick your brain about when we come back, and that's New Japan Pro Wrestling. I have a couple of emails, and I want to kind of get them out to you and kind of pick your brain on them. And we will do that with but you all when we come back here on The Deep Dive.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
All right, welcome back to The Deep Dive with Dan and Rich. We're talking with you about Dan's fandom and some shared interests. And before I jump in the New Japan, I do want to give you an opportunity to tell the listeners about the Stragus Hall of Fame, what goes on there, how many times Bruce has lost copious amounts of money, and your opinion, because I know you're really passionate about it, and you try to get as many people possible, myself included, to come to the event. And so I just want to give you the opportunity, Dan, to kind of get on the old soapbox and tell folks on why they should go to Iowa in the middle of summer and hang out with some of the luminaries of pro wrestling history.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Rich. You know, and that's one of my failures so far, as I know you've got a lot of commitments, and I'm real, like I said, I'm thrilled we're going to get to hang out a little bit in Chicago, or at least I hope so, because I'm going back really late that Sunday evening. Also, I think some of the crowd will thin out on Sunday a little bit. But Waterloo this year is going to be, I want to say, the weekend of July 26th, 27th, right in that time frame, last weekend in July. Every year they have, you know, some really meaningful inductions into a pretty legitimate Hall of Fame in terms of having to have amateur credentials to get in. They usually have Dan Gable himself will make an appearance many years. You know, we had the Big E up there not too long ago who played football at Iowa, so that was really cool to watch him interact with Mr. Gable. You know, Kurt Angle's been there over the years. The Stan Hansen has been there the last couple of years. He's going to be back this year. J.J. Dillon. You know, Jerry Briscoe is kind of the mayor of Waterloo. He really makes everybody feel welcome and at home. And the one thing I'll say is, and I think Wade can attest to this, if you ask both he and Bruce, is that Eric Nelson was the original guy that kind of started going to this thing. And after his first year, I think, or second year, he convinced me to go. And I just kind of would pester Wade as often as possible with emails saying, you know, this is something you should check out. And a couple years later, you know, he was honored as a Hall of Famer, the Jim Melby Award. Dave Meltzer's received that award as well. And the luminaries that come in for this every year are really outstanding. And, you know, Wade and Bruce have been, fixtures there since they started coming. And I think they both tell you how meaningful it is. It's a real great opportunity to sit down and actually have a meaningful conversation with and interaction with, you know, some of these legends. I mean, I've gotten to speak with Stan Hansen. We had dinner with him, Wade and Bruce and Matt and myself last year, which was a real honor, along with Herb Simmons, who's a great promoter out of St. Louis. Had a chance to visit with J.J. Dillon, had a chance to visit with Tully Blanchard, visit with Magnum T.A. I'm leaving some people out because, you know, I'm excited. They usually bring in some of the newer guys from WWE, and I'm really excited to say hello and tell them I appreciate their work. But, you know, the kid in me is more excited about seeing the wrestlers I grew up watching, and they're usually very accessible. Baron Von Raschke's there almost every year, Larry Henning. You know, again, I didn't really rehearse this, so I'm fearful I'm going to leave some really important folks out. Rob Schomburger's there doing his tremendous paintings. You can just watch him do that in front of you, which is pretty remarkable. You know, his skill level and level of talent is really cool. And I know Wade appreciated the painting he did of him, you know, the year he went into the Hall of Fame. You know, Jim Ross, I don't think is going to be able to be there this year, but he's been there about the last 5 or 6 years. And he's always a real highlight to visit with as well. You know, this is just, it's, you go to the bar, you see these people, you go to breakfast, you see these people. It's big enough where it's not awkward when you run into your favorites, but it's small enough that you can have really meaningful interactions with these people. You know, I'm getting ready to watch Ricochet tonight. We had a chance to help out a little bit and drive him in from the airport along with Stan Hansen 1 year. So that doesn't happen, you know, to too many folks, but you know, when you hang around long enough and you seem to be reasonably responsible, sometimes when they need help, they'll ask you to help a little bit too. So it's been a real thrill for me. And, you know, that makes me, again, my personal opinion is Ricochet is a great guy. He was super nice to us. And so I'm glad to see him doing so well. And same with Stan Hansen.
And looking at it, it's a weekend event. So you have the Hall of Fame, you have the talks. I know the last couple of years, Wade and Bruce, or Wade slash Bruce separately, have done either panels or podcasts with people. Could you talk a little bit about the indie show itself? Because you did a really good job talking about the Hall of Fame, but I think people should realize that it's also an opportunity to highlight both the local talent, but also the people who are there to watch the honorees.
Yes. And, you know, they usually get some of the legends involved in the indie show. Troy Peterson, Impact Pro Wrestling, is as professionally run of an independent promotion as I think you can find in the country. And, you know, they put together a really fun show, really family-friendly show. They almost always get the legends involved. Diamond Dallas Page got involved 1 year, gave one of the locals a diamond cutter. It used to be, I don't think he'll be back this year because it's been a few years since he's been there, but you watch Danny Hodge punch someone at that event, and people are like, wow, that looked legitimate. And then if you find out, it pretty much was legitimate. Like, he probably held back a little bit so he didn't permanently injure anyone. But that man's a stud at 84, 85 years old still. He can break those. I think they had Baron Corbin break an apple a few weeks ago on Raw. He couldn't do it anywhere like Danny Hodge can, just, you know, just any day of the week. So they have fun matches. We do have a battle royal every year where you too, if you're a Torch VIP member and you come up to Bruce Mitchell and you want to bet Bruce Mitchell on the outcome of the wrestling battle royal, I'm sure he will take you up on it, and I'm sure he will lose, as he has lost every year since we have been involved with this battle royal. And only 1 year were there any shenanigans going on, which I admitted to you. And the only reason I did that is because he, on his show with Mr. Bryant, he accused me of shenanigans I did not participate in the first year. And so we have a beer wager on the Luthez Cup Battle Royal every year. And Bruce's picks are routinely not good at that, even though I do greatly respect the man's wrestling knowledge. He cannot pick winners in a battle royal.
I mean, he's a Duke fan, so there's that.
There you go.
I know that's always a bit of an issue, and I'm sure at some point him and my wife will undoubtedly beat me about the head and neck for that comment. Unfortunately, this year I can't go to the Hall of Fame. My wife, though, I think 2020 would probably be the best time for me. This year, my wife is preparing for the bar. So I'm going to be in and out with that. And because of that, we moved our anniversary celebration to that weekend. So I'm going to be in Quebec City with Melissa. But I picked 2020 because that is also my ideal, especially after talking with Alan Cunahan, my ideal attempt to go to the Tokyo Dome for January 4th. So I figure if I do the Tokyo Dome and the Stragos Hall of Fame, the Stragos Hall of Fame, that's time well spent.
No doubt. And again, I'm looking forward to visiting with you in Chicago. That's kind of on my bucket list, to do Tokyo 1 year. So we may have to coordinate on that a bit, because, you know, my issue is, even though I don't like to pay for travel agencies or whatever, I'm not the most sophisticated world traveler. And so to just kind of show up in Tokyo, I suppose it would be fine. I'm sure it would be. There'd be a lot of wrestling fans there. But yeah, it's to have a few familiar faces might make it a little better. So that sounds like a great year, and it's always a fun event, and you know, it's a really cool crowd. They've done a really good job of getting new people year in and year out. I mean, there's a lot of the familiar favorites, but then they also add to that, and so it's really, like I said, they brought Ricochet in. 1 year to wrestle, which was really cool. They had Penta last year, I believe it was last year. So they have some Chuck Taylor wrestled last year. They've had a number of guys that and ladies in some cases that are, you know, really talented, and it's a really cool event. So I would definitely endorse it. Anyone that's within driving distance. It's about a 7-hour drive for me, so I'm guessing that I'm about as, you know, it's not the easiest place to get to, but it's worth the trip.
And thank you for that. I think people who have interest kind of got a great, you know, top to bottom on what it does, why you're interested, and I absolutely would not mind going. I would encourage everyone that's listening within earshot to attend. And when we come back, I do want to follow up on a couple of things. Notes, notably, we talked about Roman a little bit. I want to talk about that poll Wade put up, and we want to talk to you guys. So make sure you give us a call. Air code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And then when you get on hold, just hit 1 on the touchtone and we'll join you in the queue and answer your questions or comments or criticisms, queries, etc. But can't wait to continue talking to you here on The Deep Dive.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week. With the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
And welcome back to The Deep Dive with Rich and Dan. We are talking with you about fandom, Drago Spaz Hall of Fame, New Japan, and whatever you like, feel free to join us here at 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. So, Dan, you had an interest in the poll Wade put up, and how do you consider Roman? What do you see as Roman's, you know, role in this cast of thousands?
Right. Well, I just was going to mention, I didn't vote in the poll because I assumed it was kind of a joke. When I saw it, I mean, it's obvious they don't portray him as a heel. I don't want to, you know, take too much of Wade's energy and passion and fire he's already shown on this issue. I would recommend any VIP to listen to his audio update that he gave about this and to read his article about it. But I mean, it's one of these things that's insulting to the audience to claim that in any way, in the way he's portrayed, who he wrestles, who his friends are, how he tries to act and try to be accepted by the fans, that Roman is a heel as opposed to an unsuccessful babyface. And that's the you know, one of the things with WWE that I'm not watching as much as New Japan and other things is that there's less adjustment to, you know, what the crowd seems to want. And, you know, hey, they've done a great job of serving their corporate interests and getting a great TV deal. So I can't even say they were doing the wrong thing. But to say that Roman is any sort of a heel in the traditional wrestling genre is just absurd.
and for Roman to say it. I think that's the big thing. I heard Triple H mention it a few months ago, but to hear Roman say it, this isn't a lot like how John Cena did it before, where, you know, a big part of the audience, he was seen as a heel because he would play into those roles. And then he would add the jokes like, you know, I want to learn a couple of dance steps. I might even throw in a heel turn. And those little Cena's way to kind of grab a crowd and control the crowd and direct the crowd is something I don't think Roman's had yet. And Roman, to me, you know, because I enjoy him in the ring, I'd enjoy him a lot more if he was in a position where he could feel more confident. He's speaking to me, in my opinion, as a man that realizes things are bothering him, but he doesn't want the people bothering him to know they bother him. Because you could see it on his face when a promo goes bad and people are just being entirely, you know, just horrid. And then you also see it when he's away from the crowd and he's like, ah, that's just people being people. And it's kind of he's trying to diffuse it, but it's not really working as well as I think he thinks it does.
Well, and you can't sell it. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, you know, he certainly doesn't need to be, you know, selling how annoyed he is with the audience itself, especially within that construct. But when he's doing interviews, I mean, it's just someone obviously told him to say that, I would guess. And I don't know if he is thinking it through very well, because it just doesn't pass the smell test at all. But again, maybe WWE, I don't think they're catering to folks like us and a lot of our listeners that understand wrestling that well, at least in certain ways. I mean, I caught a few minutes of that Undercover Boss last night, and that was something else. I mean, I don't know if you were able to see that or if we went, I'm kind of going off script here, but.
Fine. I didn't get a chance to, but I'm going to watch it on demand later tonight.
I felt like it was absurdly obvious who that was, and I don't think anyone wasn't in on the joke that was watching the program itself. And honestly, it's a nice way to portray. And I think Stephanie, look, it seems like Roman's a pretty good person from everything I hear. I don't think Stephanie's a bad person either, but it was a really calculated way, in my opinion, to put out that story about wonderful Stephanie McMahon. I mean, the storyline was she was a writer that was writing a blog saying, I don't get it, or something like that. I mean, it was flimsy even by wrestling standards in terms of like why she was investigating WWE. I just, you know, I it was pretty over the top, but you know, my mother, who's, you know, a senior citizen and doesn't act like one. And if she hears this, I'm sorry for mentioning that, but you know, she thought it was kind of nice, and this nice lady was on the Undercover Boss, and I think that's the audience they were looking for. So maybe that part of it was successful, but it would have been a lot better if they had like some incompetent bad person working there that she could have like even yelled at the end, or at least had to discipline, because there might have been a little bit of drama. I mean, this was cookie cutter stuff, that show last night, and didn't do anything for me, but it was about 35 minutes. I didn't catch the whole thing, but it was about 35 minutes of my life I won't get back. And all in the name of research for the torch, Rich. That's what it was.
Well, we appreciate that. The thing for me with Undercover Boss is, and you mentioned Chicago absolutely earlier, we'll absolutely hang on Chicago because I'm looking forward to it, and it's something where life is short, so getting to hang out with people you like and – they like you, it's good to do that. Because I think in the echo chamber of social media, especially with wrestling fandom, and I want to talk about this at some point too, like the seventh star debate. I know one of my esteemed colleagues, Todd Martin, is not a fan of Dave Meltzer changing the stars. And for me, I just see it as an arbitrary thing. But whereas you have a nice, polite, reasoned, measured response from Todd, you have this just troglodyte mass that will come at Dave Meltzer's neck at any given time, just on the hint that they think they smell blood. So I agree with you. I look at all of this stuff as it's not for me. I look at Undercover Boss, like I would think I remember watching the episode of Undercover Boss where the family from White Castle, the family that owns them, showed up in different roles. And they just wanted to show, hey, kind of like what Bruce Mitchell mentioned. Hey, we're human. And, you know, I'm a ditch digger for a week. And I learned that this guy has a story and I'm going to give him a raise. So now he makes like $28,000 instead of $19,000. And look at me being nice. And that's great. But again, you're right. The audience is the humanized White Castle and their management, not show the people that they didn't give that race to are still in that exact same position. Like, how many times has Triple H mentioned, you know, he did it the once on the, and he realized instantly it was a mistake. How's your territory going? When he was talking about the very same bloggers and people who quote unquote don't get it, asking why things were being done in the way they were being done at WWE. So it's really interesting to me with this whole, they're playing so many different games at once because they're trying to keep the product hot to the people that can pay for it. And, but I mean, billions, not, you know, millions like we as the fandom can provide. And then you're also trying to keep enough of the hardcores in the seats so you can show it as a relatively interesting product. It's games within games. It's very interesting to me.
Oh, no doubt. And it's, you know, that's actually brought up like two or three different things on my mind as you talked about that. One of them just escaped me, to be honest. But I think my favorite undercover boss, and I don't want to get too far off on that, was and I just remember the other point I was going to bring up was it was like a Quality Inn, one of those choice privileges hotels that they had, because it was so realistic, because the hotel was pretty scary, like in terms of some of the quality of the thing. So it was clear that they kind of randomly selected this place because it made the company not look the greatest. And then the guy's like, oh, you know, maybe we should, you know, replace the rugs every 10 years or whatever he said. I don't remember, but it was kind of, and those people were struggling. And of course they do make the management look better, as you mentioned. But this one last night was just, yeah, she was not doing any hard labor. You know, she was in, I wonder if that episode was actually filmed initially with Enzo in it, because it almost seemed like they were cutting him out. The kid who was the Make-A-Wish, who had the cancer issue, name was Enzo. He was wearing all this Enzo gear. And of course, Cass was on there at the end, but it almost seemed like they might've had to edit it because of that. I have no inside knowledge on that, but it just, that was my impression from watching it. But the point that you brought up about Triple H, and again, I'm just kind of riffing here, but have you read any of Justin Roberts' book?
I have not.
I've been reading that based on some recommendations, and it was a special on Kindle, I think, when I got it. And he talks about, and of course, he's putting himself in the best light he can, and that's normal in a book like that, although it seemed pretty legitimate to me, how he wanted to be an event coordinator, and he wanted to participate in all these parts of the company. And the WWE was so determined to bring in people from the outside and not people that were into wrestling that they wanted to have the NBA expert, or they wanted to have the expert from golf or from wherever to make all these decisions. And some of the things that they did, in his opinion, in Justin's opinion, weren't the best for the shows. And, you know, I see that. And you know, we're talking about New Japan. I listened to the announcing in New Japan and how natural and spontaneous it is. And we've had our discussions about that. I thought the commentary last weekend was excellent. And then I listened to this stilted, less exciting commentary with WWE. I'm very disappointed Mauro Ranallo is not going to be on the show tonight. And it's just overproduced stuff. And again, we go back full circle to talking about Mid-South. I mean, Mid-South was usually Jim Ross, although occasionally Boyd Pierce, talking into a microphone with whatever came to mind, and it was usually pretty great and pretty exciting, and that's what got me into wrestling, and I'm afraid there's just less of that spontaneity and natural excitement that's in the current product outside of some outstanding wrestling that some of the folks do obviously perform.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I know we talk about New Japan a lot. And looking at NXT, and I do want to do like a mini NXT preview since we do have TakeOver tonight. What What's one thing you think, and let's take Morrow and the announcers off the table, because I don't think with Vince currently at the wheel that would ever happen. What would be one thing outside of those guys that could help make a better main roster experience?
That's a really good question. Because again, I really want to think about that a little bit, but I think sometimes kind of mixing up the types of matches that folks have. There's certain finishes that are just never considered. I mean, I don't know that it's the worst thing to have an occasion. I don't love time and limit draws. So this probably isn't the best example, but to have that, you know, I liked when they announced the match times, and that, you know, I think about all the Okada Omega matches and the draw that was involved in that and how exciting it was. I did like when they did the gauntlet match a while back, and it went on for a while, although there really wasn't much at stake in it. I guess the longer term thing is, and I think back to what I was watching, you know, territorial wrestling or Mid-South or whatever, they would build up a match over a course of several weeks and you would anticipate it and it would have consequences. And I just feel like, and they do a okay job at this sometimes, but even if it's the same match you're going to have, if you know 2 weeks in advance that Seth Rollins and Elias are going to have a rematch or something, let's just say, and either it doesn't even have to be a stipulation, it could be an Intercontinental title match, but you know, then he's not going to get another title shot for 60 days if he doesn't win or whatever. I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head here. The anticipation of the match a lot of times could be more exciting for fans than seeing the actual match. And it seems like every week when I turn on Raw, and I sip through it a lot, to be honest, that they kind of throw all these matches at me. And I'm like, well, if it was a big deal, why wouldn't we know it was coming a couple weeks in advance? I think that's one thing they could do pretty easily. And again, I know it's similar to the commentary, but give the talent more creativity and independence on their interviews. This poor Nia Jax last week, trying to, you know, the idea was there about talking about, you know, what wasn't allowed in MMA and how it worked. But I mean, it was literally like she was reading a teleprompter. And I mean, that's just what they force them to do. They can't get a word wrong. And by memorizing every word, they lose a tremendous amount, I think, of spontaneity and believability.
No, I agree. I agree completely. I think looking at NXT, looking at New Japan, looking at even WWE during some of their more, I don't want to say successful because they're about to make more money than they've ever made, more fan friendly. I guess that's friendly. You know, when people talk about the attitude,
when they were dealing with outside competition,
yes,
that spurred them on to be less regimented.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the biggest tale I learned from the Attitude Era was that the fear drove Vince and company to play essentially with no fear and no, like, there was no idea of this is a sacred cow. There were no sacred cows. It was just throw stuff at the wall, segment to segment, we're going to figure it out. And building, I think building isn't the worst thing in the world. I don't get why you couldn't have an Omega-like journey for someone. And I would be remiss if I did not go to one of our first callers. So let me do that right now. All ones, mystery date. State your name, where you're calling from. Welcome to the Deep Dive with Dan and I.
Hi, it's Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig.
What's going on?
Not much. We're talking – this is a hodgepodge because Dan's fandom intersects with so many things that I figured it would be unfair to lock in. So this is really a deep dive into Dan K. But
I've appreciated Dan so far. And you guys have totally, like, gone into what exactly I wanted to talk about when I called in the commentary thing. I was talking to my sister today about the documentary – and then I remembered right in the middle of talking about it, I was like, oh, damn it, he's not on the call tonight. And I got kind of upset about that. like Dan just said. And I was like thinking about back New Japan and I don't know if you know who Brian Campbell and Nick Costos are. They do a podcast.
I do not.
Okay, they were gushing about the New Japan. They're big into the New Japan stuff. And they were gushing about the Don Callis call and the hook the leg, and all that stuff. And I was wondering, because I don't know, do you guys know who is on the call tonight? And if there is someone that is in any sport right now, like a commentator that's in any sport, that would fit well into the, like, could be in the WWE box, like the one that the mold they made out of, like, Vic Joseph and Tom Phillips, but who could, like, kind of challenge it, like Moro and Michael Cole kind of try to put the personality into it.
Wow. I'll let Dan try to tackle that one first.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, let me just speak a little bit about some of Craig's comments. I have not seen the Morrow documentary yet. I did not have Showtime, and that's shame on me. You know, all the reviews are just extremely positive. I'm just gonna have to buck up for a month and get it just to see that, because I really appreciate what Morrow brings to the table. And I would echo the comments on Don Callis last week, and in some of our previous audios, Rich and I, and particularly Sean Radican and I, have had a little bit of back and forth. I've been a little hard on Don at times for being a little bit too over the top. This, to me, was a perfect blend of working to be professional, but at the same time, everybody knows you have a rooting interest. You know, I watch the Missouri Tigers or listen to them on the radio, and, you know, Mike Kelly's not going to say we and us and go team, but it's obvious when he's doing the radio call that he wants the team to be successful, and that was the way I took Don Callis's commentary last week on that particular item. You know, I really don't have a great answer for the suggestion on an announcer. I would just say, and I don't even know the man's name, but I started getting into the hockey a little bit here in this last Stanley Cup. I was actually in Vegas during it, so people were obviously just beside themselves. And the guy who's on NBC, and I don't know who that is, he has a really distinctive voice.
Doc Emrick.
I think that's it. Yeah. I would be like, I would let him have a shot, because, you know, the thing about announcers is that if you really have a great one and you hear that voice, you want to sit down and pay attention. When I'm flipping through the radio, and if Mike Shannon, how old as he is calling the Cardinal game, I'm going to stop and I'm going to listen to the Cardinals, and I might even crack open a beer. And so if you get someone that has that kind of a distinct voice, you know, that would be phenomenal. I mean, you know, Joe Rogan would be tremendous, but there's no way he would ever do it. And maybe my other suggestion wouldn't either. But if I'm just spitballing, those would be two names that come to mind for me.
Oh, and the answer is Vic Joseph. He's going to be there tonight.
Oh, wow. Now, Vic Joseph was involved in Pro Wrestling Ohio, Prime Wrestling, I believe, back in the day when we used to follow that really carefully. So that's okay. That'll be cool. I mean, it's cool from that perspective.
And for me, gosh, I would say, and I'm going to pick your brain about what you just said, because I don't know anything about Joseph. I don't watch 205 Live. With my other job, it's been a little hard for me to watch additional wrestling other than, like, I've basically dropped Raw. I'll watch half a SmackDown. And I've, you know, given the events of the last few weeks, I focused on New Japan progress. And if someone really liked Pro Wrestling Fusion, I could watch that after I put my son to bed, like on weekends. So I didn't. Yeah, that's really cool. I'm really hoping that Joseph can step up, because Percy's done better. Nigel should be on the main roster. I'm happy he's in NXT, but he's another one that should be on the main roster. His voice is so distinctive. Him and Corey Graves, that would be a good combination of a two-man team. Obviously, I would prefer a two-man team, but, you know, that's, you know, neither here nor there. But I would say if there's anyone that you could hire, I actually was thinking Jenner because his voice is so distinctive. Another person I would like to see would be someone that's like a pseudo celebrity. So I can't think of a name right now, but someone that, if they're looking to get these huge TV deals and they're looking to be pulled in, someone who's a wrestling fan that's fairly knowledgeable, that's also willing to spend the time. So for me, Steve Amell would have been great if they had Cody in the company.
Charles Barkley would be a dream.
Yes.
I think. I mean, he used to be involved with Ric Flair back in the day. I don't know if he follows the current product, but talk about a home run. Yeah.
Funches. Funches. I met him when I was in New Orleans.
I was there.
Yeah, that's right. When we were all at the what was it, Craig? Was that Joey Janela's spring break?
Spring break.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so Funches did announcing for
the Royal Rumble, the Battle Royal.
The Cluster
Royal,
F.
The gimmick.
Yeah, he did the Cluster F announcing. So you could have someone like him. I mean, NBC comedian, national guy. If the smaller companies can use them, why shouldn't the WWE? And that also checks that box that Bruce always brings up of magically there's got to be a black dude that has to be a commentator, the literal color to the color commentary. Why not have a guy that's funny, loves pro wrestling, and can do it while having fun, you know, while having enjoyment? Because I feel like sometimes when you listen to a commentator that doesn't want to have fun, it takes away from the enjoyment of the match. Like the Don Callis in New Japan, the actual anguish he had in his voice when he realized Kenny Omega had to win two successive falls was palpable. It wasn't just, you know, him acting. It was him agonizing over the fact that his friend basically lost the match after the first fall.
Yeah, that's. I think these are all good suggestions.
So, what else were you thinking, Craig? You came out the box hot.
I'm gonna let you guys go, and because I want you to keep picking his brain. But I wanna tell you. You guys were talking about Roman. Go back to the night because after I was talking to Travis the other night. I put on the Money in the Bank right after Dean won, or the night Dean won. I think it was 2016. And then I watched the Raw the night after, just the first segment, the night after Dean won. And they did like a promo segment with him and Roman and Seth all in the ring together. And take like 5 minutes out of your day. You just don't watch the whole damn Raw, but just the first 5 minutes and just watch that, like the part of that segment and see what Roman did. And it'll kind of seem weird because of how he's, what he's done in the last 2 years. I won't spoil it for you. I'll just let you come back and do it. But I hope you guys have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Always a pleasure, Craig. And again, you're another person that's got to be caught up with at All In. So I'll check that out later tonight. Before we close up shop, though, Dan, let me go back to break. When we come back, Dan and I are going to hit up some final subjects, and obviously, if we have time, answer some emails here on The Deep Dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage, but because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive, Dan Rich. We are closing up shop here, going through some final conversations and talking to you, so make sure you give us a call, area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. I want to give a shout-out to Boris. He's currently working and unable to call in, but he wanted to extend his thanks and excitement for listening to the show once he gets a chance to get off his shift. So that love's always appreciated. And hopefully, again, given you live in Chicago, Boris, I hope we run into you as well. So, Dan, we had a lot to work through. What else did you want to hit in the time we have left?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I just really appreciate the opportunity to be on here. I guess we have a few minutes. You brought up earlier the discussion about the 7-star rating that Dave gave the Omega Okada match, and a polite back and forth, as you mentioned, between Todd and Dave about that. I don't know about you. I guess I kind of fit somewhere in the middle of that argument, whereas to me, I've kind of always been a little bit hesitant to say something's an above and a 5-star match. However, this particular match, in my personal rating category, I feel like it needs a new it set a new bar. I really believe that. And so, you know, whatever my personal ratings are worth, I would have gone above the standard for this match. So I kind of see both sides of the argument, and maybe I could throw it at you, Rich, and get your thoughts on all that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I had a little bit of a debate with one of my closest friends in the world on it, because I have been always of the opinion, whenever I see on Twitter someone's mad at Dave about a ranking in general, this is before 5, 6, 7 stars. This is one man's arbitrary ranking, and over 30 years, it's gotten illustrative praise because he's fairly, like Bruce has mentioned this over the years. If you know Dave, you know why he gave a rank. Like, you can see what he was looking for. And Bruce is probably one of the best people at, like, gauging the Dave Meltzer star ratings before he even comes up with them. So that's really cool. Now, for me, it's arbitrary. Now, if you want to make your own and you want to say it's 10 stars, do it. But I don't feel like there's an avenue or a forum by which you should be mad that the person who, as my friend Chris mentioned, even though it was a Cornette idea and other people and Dave did it and made it popular, I don't see where your energy should be wasted complaining about his opinion of it if that's not your opinion. Like, this is a very subjective sport. I'm not a deathmatch guy. If you want to show me a 5-star deathmatch, I might not be able to make it through the match, but I watched that match and I could see why. I, as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, I didn't know he was going to give it 7 stars because remember
that was my expectation, Rich, to be honest. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just guessing. No. That's exactly what I thought he was going to do. Given the bar he had set and the way he had rated those matches, I said, I bet he goes 7 stars with this. And again, you articulated it perfectly. And I just want to mention that, I mean, anger over this, and I guess some people just get on Twitter, you know, obviously to troll people, obviously to get a rise out of people. I've never understood that. I mean, I like to tease my friends a little bit from time to time, but to try and upset people with some celebrity or people you don't know, it just strikes me as just kind of and you see some great things on social media too, but it's just kind of frustrating. But, you know, I really want to echo your comment. Like, it's just disagree. He's not a bad guy. He's not going to care that you would say, you know, I just feel like that 5 stars should be the max. And this is my feeling. That's, you know, granted, he may not respond to you. But when he responds to you and tells you he thinks you're an idiot, I don't know why anyone would want that type of feedback. But some people apparently do.
Yeah, it's really weird to me, and it's just that for me, I am a fan of – I got into wrestling because I enjoyed it. As I've gotten older, I'm not a star guy, and that's the thing. When I do the roundtables with Sean Radican, I'm not a star guy. If he puts me in a corner, I'll throw something out, but I just know when there's excellence, I see it. This match to me – and my friend Chris's argument, which I think is a valid one. He'll be on in a few weeks to – I don't want to one-side this. He'll be on in a few weeks to not only talk about the star issue, but also to talk about the changing face of New Japan and how should they have to change to come to North America, which is a question as I was walking yesterday with my wife I really thought about. because he has a point. Like, New Japan doesn't need to have a primarily Gaijin champion pool to attract American viewers, or do they? And if they do, what does that say about us? Like, that's very weird, especially because most of them are Canadian. So that's going to be a whole conversation. But when it comes to the star rankings, I mean, you get mad, you move on. If I watched that match, and the three things that came out of it for me were the physical story of the fact that I've never seen a professional wrestler, and I mentioned this last week, use every move he's had in his career, with the exception of that he couldn't do the Hadouken that he took from Street Fighter. But every other move that had been a signature move in his career, plus the two Bullet Club leaders before him, their move, whereas he changed it from Bloody Sunday to a double stomp. That, to me, like, that was the illustration of I'm doing literally everything I can to beat you. And the image of the Rainmaker. I've never seen a finisher misfire that seems so just – it changed the tide of that match.
Absolutely. And let me just add, Rich, first of all, I want to thank you because you were putting some of these things out to me while you're on the treadmill mid-match. And it added to my appreciation of it. We were both watching live at, I don't know, 4:30, 5:30 in the morning Central Time, I guess. I picked up on some of these things, but you add a lot to my enjoyment of the product, and I'm not a paid person by the torch or anything, but I would encourage folks, if you're not VIP, to do it and go VIP. And one of the first audios you're going to want to listen to is that review of Dominion with Rich and with Sean and with Alan. And, I really appreciate the perspective Sean brings to things. But I would also add, like, about 10 minutes into the discussion, Alan kind of says, okay, you know, we're breaking down the match and that's great, but it became more about how the match made everybody feel and about the things you're talking about why it was such a meaningful match. And I felt like at that point, the conversation, I'm probably not describing it perfectly, but it became deeper and more meaningful for me as a listener, someone who experienced a lot of the same emotions watching the match, that really would add to someone's enjoyment of that. So if you're getting into New Japan, you owe it to yourself to watch this match. It's great if you know the backstory. You don't have to appreciate what a phenomenal athletic and storytelling match it was. And then I think if you listen to the audio these three guys did over last weekend, you'll appreciate it that much more. So I just want to kudos to all of you for that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a ball doing it. And I think, again, you nailed it. When Alan did that, it was amazing because I think too often, especially Sean and I now in the last almost year, we've been working together with between Radican Worldwide and Sean Radican's audio community. We get stuck in this is a recap. Then we talk about after the recap. When Alan kind of changed the call in the ring, so to speak, it let us open up to some more things that we might not have done before. Like for me, the Kenny Omega match was a story of a guy who, when you listen to the audio, like we tried to tie that together, and I hope that helped people. If you follow that path that Alan and I started talking about, where this guy, if you follow his interviews from the last 10 years, went from a person who had confidence that he could change the world of professional wrestling. He just didn't know how he could do it, who was almost on the verge of quitting, who sent in this crazy tape with this guy from the Japan, from my granddad, Kota Ibushi, that people talked about because they're outdoors wrestling and being psychopaths. And that's turned into main event, New Japan Pro Wrestling, top tier, 7-star best bout machine, and he's doing it. And I don't know how I don't think people realize this. Like, if you look at Kenny's moveset, most of it's video games. Like, mm-hmm. This is a guy who, this above all, to thine own self be true. He and Austin Creed are themselves while wrestling, and there's something to be said that if you can be that authentic, you are living, not necessarily, I don't want to say living your best life. There's this idea when I was a career coach, when I worked at Pitt in that capacity, there's an idea of I'd have in my office of ikagi, which is finding a job that can give you reward, a job that could pay you, a job that feels like you are providing to the universe, whatever you believe. And I feel like Kenny is in that zone, and that wrestling match was his magnum opus. And Okada, as good as he is, as great as he is, as legendary as he is, could not stand in the way of a man and his best friends trying to get to the top of that company. And that to me is like, it's like watching the Goonies in a wrestling match. It's like watching Stand By Me in a wrestling match. It's like watching, you name it, Breaking Electric Boogaloo in a wrestling match. And he just exudes the confidence of a person who knows he's gotten to the peak he needed to. And I just, you know, pro wrestling should do that. It can't do it every time. And I've heard Bruce say this, and I've heard others say it. When wrestling's bad, it's bad. But when it's good, it's great. And that was great. No, that was greatness.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, again, getting back to your audio about it, is we have a tendency, I think, to want to quantify things and say this is our scientific expert, so-called expert, whatever you want to say, like, constructive view of wrestling, because it is such a weird genre to most people, and it isn't well defined for most people. So it's like, hey, we have these star ratings. Hey, let's look at this move and this move. And I'll just repeat, like I said, Alan got you all started, and then that conversation is about 20 minutes long. Is really worth listening to for folks that haven't done so. And I watched the you talked about Austin Creed. I watched the Street Fighter back and forth, not all the actual matches, but just kind of the interviews with Kenny and the Bucks and the New Day. And that's kind of what I was talking about before. It was clear those guys were having fun. They were ad-libbing. Not everything went perfectly, but that's what I love about wrestling, are creative guys that are, you know, Kenny was playing heel for a while and it was obviously kind of phony. And then they came back at the end and all were friends and talking about how they love Street Fighter. And I played Street Fighter in the arcade 15, 20 years ago, I guess, but I don't know much about it. But it was compelling YouTube viewing for a few minutes, because here are these creative, entertaining guys doing something they love and talking a little trash and having some fun and not being overly scripted. And it was really great.
And I can't talk enough about how, I mean, they're jokes, and I enjoyed the fact that he took it. I think he said something. I can't remember what he said about the New Day, and then he stopped, and he's like, I went too far. I'm sorry.
Into the mid-card, something about the mid-card. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And it was so, like, it was great, because he really did pull up, and he was like, no, I'm sorry. That was too harsh. That was too harsh.
Yeah. Yeah.
But tell wow, we have really almost matched Kenny and Okada here, 62 minutes strong, almost at 65. Dan, thank you. You got to come back on again, because we just breezed through an hour like it was nothing. Before we get out of here, any pertinent social media wise, let the folks know how they can reach you, how they can chat with you about this sport we love, and lay them on them.
Okay. Well, again, I'm a pure amateur when it comes to wrestling commentary and things. And so if you look at my Twitter at DD Keister, KUESTER, there'll be a little bit of poker stories. I'm playing a little bit of the World Series of Poker this summer, off and on. There'll be a little bit of wrestling commentary. My real job is as a teaching economics at Kansas State. So I'm a big free trade guy. And so there'll be a little bit of that. So and a little bit of economic education, which is where I do my research. I have a website, if anyone's interested, called Economics of the Office, which is just a bunch of office television clips that are designed to help faculty teach econ to people that aren't that familiar with economics. Because I love my job. You were talking about that earlier, about feeling like you're helping folks, and I'm fortunate to do that. So my social media presence is even more all over the map than our hour discussion was. But if people are interested in following me, I appreciate it. And I kind of stick with mostly non-newsworthy events, except other than I'm kind of a passionate free trade guy. And so the not to get too far off track, but it's been a discouraging few weeks and months in that regard. But yeah, I'd be happy to talk wrestling if people do want to follow me, but be warned that when Michael Porter Jr. gets drafted, I'm going to be thrilled for him and talking up a little MIZ, Mizzou stuff. So if you can put up with that, please follow me. And it's been a thrill to talk to you, Rich. And I know you've got a great social media presence and you, you have many interests and I respect all your opinions. I look forward to talking with you about them in Chicago.
Excellent. Well, thank you, my friend. And thank you for taking the time. And thank you guys for taking the time to listen to us. We have officially hit the 65-minute match mark. So congratulations. Dan, we did do it. We met the Okada standard. And you guys, it's always been a pleasure. This week was awesome. We had a little bit of a potpourri, but obviously with an interesting man like Dan, that's kind of how we have to play it. Next week, in our next few weeks, actually, leading into the first year anniversary of the deep dive, we got some fun things planned. So up next would be, let me take a look at the list of doom. We're going to be going over with my good friend, Daniel Palmer. We're going to talk about some business of professional wrestling, the idea of the windfalls coming up in terms of the new money with television and how things can change, how unions can help things. And can Roman Reigns be the guy that changes the face of wrestler benefits in 2019, 20 and beyond? So I'm looking forward to that chat with D-Palm. I'll also be on his show this week in his decision pod. So definitely tune in on that. You can always reach me at rich_fan. Dive into something new. Challenge yourself. Put yourself in an opportunity where you can outdo even your highest heights. And you can be the Kenny Omega of your world. Change it. It's been real, guys. And before I go, I'm going to continue the stellar sales job that Dan started when it comes to the VIP. Not only am I a Torch staffer, but I'm also a client. So listen to these words from the editor publisher, and I'll see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.